It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Good afternoon, or if you're listening to the repeat, good evening. I just recently took a tour with my 17-year-old daughter, looking at colleges in the lower 48 to decide where she might want to go to school. And I know from talking to my friends that a lot of parents of teens have been through the same thing. You know, where shall we go? And really given scant attention even to staying here at home in Anchorage. We think of UAA, and maybe that's not the choice and that seems to fit, and don't look any further. But that is not the only choice. There is a private four-year college in Anchorage. It's Alaska Pacific University. And although it's small, it has some really interesting aspects about it that are quite attractive for students from Alaska. My guest today is Dr. Don Bantz, who is the president of Alaska Pacific University. And we're going to talk about APU, what makes it attractive, and then also, why is it the only one? There's no other four-year university in Alaska that's private. There are Bible colleges. There are technical schools where you can get a certificate for a job. There used to be one down in Sitka, Sheldon Jackson. It went out of business. APU is the only one offering a four-year liberal arts education. And in that, it's quite an asset to our community and well worth learning more about. So thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Bantz. Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
So you've been the president of APU for 2 years. And what brought you to this spot, this college, this time, this place?
Well, I'd spent 12 years here before and always loved Alaska and unfortunately left Alaska because the educational system failed my daughter. So I have a big passion for educational reform. And I was looking, I had a lot of folks looking for, calling me for about presidencies, and I really had no interest in being a president of a university with, say, a major football team. Mm-hmm. And that pretty much ironed out, you know, ruled out many of them. So then all of a sudden I got a call about this one, and I saw it in the Chronicle. And
you were at Evergreen.
I was at Evergreen, and this, you know, the chance of coming back to Alaska was just very appealing. And, of course, the setting here is beautiful. And when I came up and interviewed, I was quickly sold on the university.
Now, you said something about the educational system failing your daughter. I can't let you go on without telling us that story.
Well, my daughter was highly gifted and had gone to all the Montessori schools, preschools here in Anchorage. And once she hit the public system, she was labeled a troublemaker immediately because she was just bored stiff and used to that other kind of system. And so she had no future here. We had her tested out, embarrassed the principal, embarrassed the teacher. And so my wife, took her outside to a private school for highly gifted in Seattle.
Oh, I see. And how did that all end up? Where is she now?
Worked out great. Well, she's in Brooklyn. She finished her.
Lots of other highly gifted kids, right?
Yeah. So that's why I really got involved in education myself.
Mm-hmm. So your own training is a master of public administration and a
master
doctorate.
And doctorate. Mm-hmm. Public administration, policy, and law.
So that gives you a good training to be administrator in a fairly challenging administrative job, I would think.
I have to practice what I preached all those years as a faculty.
Yes. So the educational philosophy of APU is not 100% mainstream. I mean, you're trying to do something that's a little different. And in a nutshell, what's different about APU and the way you try to teach students there?
Well, I approach that from the end result, the outcome. What do you want out of an education experience? And for me, it's about making a difference, finding yourself in the world, and creating a meaningful lifelong journey. And for me, what happens in education is should happen, but doesn't often, is what I call deep learning. And that literally is you're growing your neurons, you're firing them up like firecrackers, and you're connecting them into new neural networks. That, to me, is the essence of all knowledge. And we call it deep learning or embodied learning because it stays with you. It's not like taking a test. We've all crammed for tests. You cram it in there, and then you download it, you know, at least 80-85% of it, you know, a few weeks later. That's passive, you know, learning to me. What I see at APU in small class sizes, some of the smallest in the country, personalized instruction, and active learning. Active, engaged learning in relevant real-world settings is the route to deep learning. And so that's what really, and I see the results of that in our students. They're so articulate, they're so engaged, and that's what sold me on this place.
So the philosophy is changing the student, making them a better learner, a better thinker, rather than trying to push a certain content into that person. It's not filling a bag sort of with content. It's making a person who's able to do critical thinking and adapt to the world better.
Exactly. And you get there through student engagement. And so many of our kids, we lose them. We lose them in high school or earlier because they're just not engaged. And they have to adapt to this very, you know, rigid system of education we have in this country, as opposed to taking them where they're at, finding what turns them on, what they're passionate about, and going with that.
So to do that, I guess you need a highly individualized type of instruction. You can't have a large class and be giving everybody the same lecture class and then expecting them to engage in it from where they're at, right?
That's correct.
So how do you do that? What does an APU class look like that would be different from how one at, say, a large public university, which we can remain nameless?
Well, I have a picture on my little computer. Introductory biology at Washington State, University of Washington. 700 students and one faculty on a two-tiered stage. You know, that's the epitome of, you know, what we're not. Introductory biology at APU is one faculty and about 8 to 10 students in the field, hands-on doing work in Potter's Marsh, wherever. And I have several examples of that. One is one of my favorites is something I wish I could have done when I was in college. We have an introductory geology and glaciology program. So where are you studying? You're out on the glacier. 2 weeks, you're camped out, you hike up, ski into the glacier, and you learn outdoor study skills. But at the same time, they're up there on Eklutna Glacier measuring the recision of the glacier for the municipal light and power. So they're doing real, you know, a snow science and glaciology in a setting. This is a job setting, a work skill setting that you can use. And in addition, it's real world. We've been doing this for several years now. So municipal light and power gets something out of it, and our students get something out of it. And I can give you example after example of that. To me, taking students into the field and out of the classroom is what's needed and what we do.
Interesting, exciting. We have a lot more to talk about. I'm with Dr. Don Bantz, who's the president of Alaska Pacific University. My name is Charles Wolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. If you have questions, comments, anything you want to talk about higher education, maybe you're in the process of choosing a college now, or maybe you're just thinking about this in terms of how it fits into our community, we invite you to get on the air with us. The phone number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free at 888-353-5752. And email is a great way to get on the air and ask your question, hometown@alaskapublic.org. That's one word, hometown@alaskapublic.org. I read those. Those come right up on my screen here in the studio, and I'll read your questions on the air or your comments. So looking at, I know people feel differently about the U.S. news rankings, but they're good to look at some statistics and see how different colleges are doing. I noticed, I guess from a couple of different sources. One is that that there's a test that's given to college students to look at their growth during the time they're in school. And a lot of colleges and universities around the country have objected to this because they've come up with results that show the kids really didn't grow very much, that they didn't have much to show for their 4 years. But APU scores near the top in the country on that, 98%, 98% percentile for your seniors and the great majority of your students showing a lot of growth. What is that test measuring, and what is that what does that tell us about APU as opposed to somewhere else?
Well, it's a testocracy, I call this country. You know, we're really into testing.
But, right.
This is one test that has a lot of controversy around it, but I think it's valid in the sense that what you're doing with that CLA is you're testing freshmen.
And what does CLA stand for?
Collegiate Learning Assessment.
Right. I couldn't come up with the name.
It was formulated by the RAND Corporation. And it really tries to test the outcomes that educators and employers really are interested in upon a graduation. As you mentioned, critical thinking, reasoning analytically, solving problems creatively, and communicating clearly and cogently. And so what it does is it tests a freshman coming in, and then it retests that senior when going out. And so it's a value added, you know, the learning. And I always say that, you know, if you come in with an A, and if you come in as an A student, you're going to probably graduate as an A student. What APU is good at is taking a lot of the B students and turning them into A students. And so the value added of that growth is, I think, fairly significant. Now, you have to be a little careful with those results because we don't test everybody. We're trying to move in that direction. But we do score very high on that benchmark. And you can see that in our senior projects. Every student does a senior project presentation. A whole year is devoted to that. And at the end of those, we listen into them, and we're coming up on that again in a couple of weeks here, and it's my favorite time of the year. You see the growth. That's where you really see it.
Now, I also noticed that at least according to these statistics, only about 22% of your freshmen end up graduating in 4 years. Is that a concern, or is that what is that an indicator of?
Well, you know, it's funny. I sat on the governor's task force on higher ed, and we set the benchmark. We're the high benchmark in Alaska for that graduation rate,
right?
And yet it's so poor. And it's poor mainly because the reasons, financial aid. I mean, finances is the big reason that many students don't graduate from our university. And it's a trend now that a lot of students they're floating around. The traditional, you know, you start as a freshman and graduate 4 years later is no longer true in most universities. They're shopping.
They're transferring to find where they can get the credits for what they can afford.
Yeah, and they shop and they hop, particularly in this economy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our students a lot of students are doing this. They'll spend the first 2 years in community colleges or public universities and then come the last 2 years to graduate. So if you look at our transfer graduation rate, the number of coming in as juniors and complete, that's very high, way up there.
So, and then in terms of your freshman return rate, this is the number of students who decide to stay after 1 year. That's above 70%. And I frankly don't know how that compares to other schools. I'm betting it's way above UAA. I think been a big problem for them.
Yes.
Is that something that you consider a good sign of satisfaction among students, or is it, again, this financial issue where people are forced to consider every year what they're going to do?
It's finances. You know, and ironically, I heard University of Alaska has one of the lowest public tuitions in the country, and that's a good thing for the state. That's a very good thing. But I heard somewhere that their number one complaint of students is the price.
Right.
So, you know, for them to complain there and then obviously affecting our price, you know, it's a concern for everybody.
Right.
The cost.
Well, we can't, unfortunately, that is one of the first issues that comes up in any discussion about higher education is the cost of tuition. Mm-hmm. Having recently been to all these schools with my daughter, I know that the tuition that you charge is actually very, very low compared to most private four-year colleges, small liberal arts colleges, yet it's still a lot of money. Talk about what your tuition is and what your financial aid profile is.
Sure. We're right at the average nationwide, $29,000. That's our sticker price. As you know, it goes up to $50,000 and on higher in many places.
Especially with the smaller schools. I mean, they tend to be more expensive, yes?
Smaller or more elites, yeah. Mm-hmm. It depends on location and other factors. But again, for, you know, even the cost of business up here, we're still at the average. So the sticker price, though, is not what people pay. And it's not what Alaskans pay. We discount very heavily for Alaskans. So, on average, an Alaskan, and again, it varies, will pay about $15,000. Now, that's a full year tuition, private, small university, private. That's about the same price you'll pay, as you know, on the Western undergraduate exchange rate if you go outside to a public as an Alaskan.
So, the WUI program, as it's known. Yeah.
The WUI. And you compare what you're going to get there, an average class size of 350, and you know, in our class size, it's 9-1. So it's just a qualitatively different experience. And as you probably know, we're going through the largest disinvestment in public higher education in our nation's history. In my last public university in Washington State, 10% cut, 5% cut, 2%, 4%. You know, pretty soon we've cut a third of our budget, raised our class sizes by a third, and raised our tuition by a third. So, you know, Alaska has escaped that so far, and they're very fortunate.
Yeah, and especially in the University of California system, very tragic. that I was talking to my cousin whose daughter is at UCLA, and I guess it's virtually impossible to graduate there in 5 years because you simply can't get the classes. And right. It's kind of like getting a class is like getting a concert ticket. You need to be on online the minute it becomes available to click that mouse at the right moment. So the discount or the financial aid that goes to Alaskan students, how do you manage that?
That's a good question. And every small private university is struggling with that. We call it the race to the bottom because tuition discounting, unless you have that huge endowment to cover it, it's just kind of a bait and switch because we don't have an endowment to cover that.
Right.
So, you know, it costs us $25,000 to educate a student per year and we're collecting $12,000. Now, that's not a good business model.
Right.
And so one of the reasons we've been able to do that is all these endowed properties we have developing around the campus that bring in earned income and revenue. Because, you know, we get zero support from the state, so we have to earn every penny.
What's endowed property? Property that you're able to rent out?
Yeah, like we just finished a new facility for the U.S. Geological Survey.
Oh, sure.
You know, mm-hmm. they have one building and they've now have two. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a nice long-term income. And then we'll own the building at the end. And the same with the we rent this obviously the space here we're in now is on our property and there's a lease for that, so it's that kind of earned income revenue that allows us to you know give those discounts.
I see. So when we talk about a $15,000 tuition, that's before a family fills out the famous FAFSA, which I can't even remember what FAFSA stands for, but it's this federal form, which is as bad as doing your income taxes. Mm-hmm. But after you do it, then you can qualify for very advantageous loans and a certain amount of grants. So that could go against the $15,000.
Correct, particularly if you get a Governor's Promise Scholarship bill, you can decrease that quite a bit.
So the Governor's Promise Scholarship, that's the Governor Parnell's mm-hmm. program where students who achieve a certain level in high school are then able to get some support towards college.
That's right.
Okay. So does that make you overall financially competitive with this with UAA, UAF, or are you still, because a talented, gifted student can essentially go there for free.
That's great. Yeah, so in that sense, no, we
can't. We can't
compete. Yeah, we just can't. I mean, their honors program, literally with a Governor's Promise Scholarship, it's getting close to almost free.
Yeah. So why do you think so many kids do go outside, the kids who are at the top of their class and show the most promise? What are the factors playing into their minds?
Well, there are many. I mean, a lot of folks just want to, see the world and go outside and experience something other than Alaska. I think there's a whole myth of the named school, you know, the elite mm-hmm. schools that, you make the contacts and you get the it's not always the best education, but in terms of contacts and future, it's very good. So, you know, though you mentioned them ratings and all that stuff, it's a lot of it's marketing. And I counsel a lot of parents and students about the college search process, and I counsel them to look for very different things that most people look for.
Obviously you've talked about student-teacher ratio, which is an important one, and I doubt there's anybody who's got a better number than you do at 9-to-1 on that. Other items that you think are important?
Oh, absolutely. Well, size matters. And I always tell them, you're better off at a small university just because of the personal attention. But some folks want that big college experience and want to be in a classroom with 300 or 400 students. Mm-hmm. The other things I think that are important are, I always go back to student engagement. Find a university where they will engage your student in active learning activities, not just lecture room. There's mm-hmm. a place for lecture, always. But find a place that will engage you. And I always say that learning communities are the way to do that. For example, we have a college freshman coming up here from outside. They go out we call it journeys. It's a 2-week program. We take them out in the woods, rafting, hiking, fishing, camping. They bond. They develop a learning community, and they have the Alaskan experience. Now, I wish I would have had that kind of introduction to college. So that's what I'm talking about. Find a place where you will have a learning community, a cohort of friends and support systems that will carry you through the tough times.
Right. So you're going to be more bonded to the place you are. You're not just a customer.
Right. And you're going to know the faculty, and you're going to have, particularly here, relationships with faculty that are lifelong mm-hmm. because you're going to know them so well, and you can go in to see them anytime. and that class with 700 students, that faculty member is never going to know their name and never going to talk to them.
Right, right. So according to the stats that I was looking at, you accept about a third of the students who apply. Your acceptance rate, is that true or more than that? Or
varies across the different programs, graduate versus undergraduate.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of qualities are you looking for in a student?
Well, I think you know, our students are really serious, and they're disciplined and they're engaged. And I think we're looking for someone that, you know, for me, I'm looking for someone that wants to make a difference and is serious about their academics. We have a very strong, you know, moral component to our education as well. And so it depends. Again, you know, I look at adult undergraduate is a different population. Those folks are coming back now wanting to, you know, get their BA and they're working. They're
building
adults.
Some skills.
Yeah, it's a whole different population. And I think you look at them different because they're now serious. They may not have got the grades they needed back when, but now they're showing up and they're motivated. Mm-hmm. And so that motivation is a really important piece of it.
Mm-hmm. And then for an undergraduate, a kid who's coming in as a freshman, you're looking for sort of good college transcript, but they don't have mm-hmm. to be the ultra star. They just have to show some curiosity, some interest.
Right. Again, we're small enough that we don't have just one checklist. Mm-hmm. You know, we can look at those and then say, well, here may be a person that's, you know, hasn't been engaged. They're, you know, they weren't a good fit with their particular high school or whatever, and now they're ready. And so we look at those individualistic.
I see. And what do you see coming out of the Anchorage School District in terms of the students who are coming to APU? Are they well prepared?
Tragically, nationwide, and this is mirrored up here, less than half of the graduates from high school are college ready.
So that means that you need to do some remediation when you have those students, or what? How do you handle that?
Well, we're very different than UAA. Now, UAA is an open university. They have to take everybody that shows up, whether they're college ready or not, and so they'll spend a lot of time in remediation. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case at APU. You're gonna jump into college day one.
You need to be ready.
Now you may have some writing deficiencies or math deficiencies that you'll have to pick up, but they're not nearly that. You know, we're not going to take someone that's way behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, my name is Charles Woolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. I'm talking with Dr. Don Bantz, and our topic today is Alaska Pacific University. Our topic is really higher education, four-year college, private college in Alaska. But since he's the president of the only one, it's a small panel. But I want to invite another guest on just briefly here and give Dr. Bantz a chance to have a glass of water. There used to be another private college operating in Alaska, another four-year college, and actually it operated for more than 100 years. It was Sheldon Jackson College in Sitka. It's no longer in existence, and I guess the campus has been sold off. And so just to give us some perspective on that experience and the challenges that Sheldon Jackson faced and was unable to overcome, I invited John Holst to be with us. John is a educational consultant. He's been a superintendent of schools. He was an assembly member down in Sitka. And after Sheldon Jackson got in trouble, he helped him out a little bit with giving some advice and some management of their closing procedure, I guess. And I welcome to the show, John. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Charles.
So Sheldon Jackson is now no longer a college, and I guess the process is the process still ongoing of sort of disposing of the college's assets?
Well, as of February 1st of 2011, you know, about 13, 14 months ago now, the trustees transferred the ownership of the remaining campus to the Sitka Arts, Arts Southeast, which is the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. The Arts Camp had been operating on the campus for some 40 years. And so they're back on the campus again after being over at Mount Edgecombe for several years, and they now have ownership of the campus.
I see. And so briefly tell us about your role as the college was running into trouble. How were you involved in dealing with the problems that had arisen?
Well, I was sort of on two sides of the fence. I was on the assembly at the time of the closing. And at the time, shortly before the closing, they had come to the assembly and asked for a loan, which I happened to vote for, but the prevailing vote was no, and shortly after that, the college closed. And I was asked to join as a member of the trustees, and I, at that time, declined. But I said, if you're really just looking for advice from somebody local that understands the kind of the politics, I said I'd be happy to do that. And so I started serving as an advisor, unpaid advisor, to the trustees until mid-June of 2010, when they decided to change leadership, and I was offered a job at that point to assist them. And we've gotten to the point now where we had $5.2 million worth of debt, secured debt, with Alaska Growth Capital at that time, and another $650,000 worth of debt that was unsecured, which the trustees thought was important to deal with as well. So we managed by the end of 2010, during the last several days, closed three major sales, $2 million, $1.6 million, and a $600,000 deal, and paid off what we owed to Alaska Growth Capital. And then within a month sold for $10, the campus to the Fine Arts Camp. And we have been working on taking care of what's left, which, believe it or not, is fairly significant. We had all the archives and all the stuff that was left, all the papers, the memorabilia, the desk of Sheldon Jackson, and all that stuff, portraits. We needed to figure out what to do with that. And we have just recently signed an agreement with the State Museum System, Bob Banghart, and the state is going to be renovating Sheldon Jackson, the library, Stratton Library on the campus, and making it a part of the Sheldon Jackson Museum. Hmm. And so they have agreed to take over all of those materials and papers and to store them and eventually catalog them.
And for those listeners who don't know, Sheldon Jackson was the first educational agent appointed for Alaska during the administration of President Benjamin Harrison. Came to Alaska as a missionary, as a, I believe, a Presbyterian missionary, and set up schools. And Sheldon Jackson College was founded at that point about 130 years ago to train Alaska Natives and assist them in becoming citizens, and sort of a model of assimilating to the new culture that was coming to Alaska at that time. And the college ran apparently successfully, but closed because of the debt burden. And I guess, John, my question for you would be, how did they accumulate so much debt?
Well, the during the last 20 years or so, they were running with a much smaller population of students than really would be necessary to balance. You know, they're oftentimes in the 100 to 150 range of students. And, of course, when you've got a full staff trying to offer a full four-year program, that just doesn't pencil out. And added to that, the mission of the college was to educate Alaska Native students, many of whom came from backgrounds and from communities that where they did not have the financial wherewithal to pay the tuition. And so the college ran on donations mostly for many, many years. And, of course, the debt accumulated over time when there wasn't enough donations to balance the books, and they just got in too deep.
So I guess at some point, go ahead.
I think across the nation, schools the size of Sheldon Jackson have all but disappeared everywhere. And so it isn't an unusual thing. I think it has happened numerous times in many states across the country. So, and the colleges that have survived are the ones that grew somewhat in size, maybe got up to a number of students that made the tuition balance out with the expenses, or were endowed heavily, and so they had support to pay the expenses and the costs when tuition didn't cover them.
So in terms of Sheldon Jackson, at some point, well before the end, before they'd built up all that debt, somebody needed to say, well, gee, this isn't working. We need a business model that is somehow going to be sustainable. And for whatever reason, either that didn't happen or there was no such business model available to them.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. I was living in Sitka during the time. I have lived there since 1993, so I was sort of on the sidelines watching all this, but not personally involved or directly involved. But it just did seem like the model was not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody was watching and saying, you know, how long is this going to be? And then there were several crises. There was one during the 90s, late 90s, and then there was another one and then shortly after that, and then finally the crisis in 2007 led to closing.
Right. And I'm sure that must have been a traumatic moment for the community when the college closed, and it's such a sort of landmark in Sitka. And also, I'm sure there are people employed there who are suddenly unemployed. How does that impact the town, and what's the sort of... what's the fallout been since then?
Well, it was an economic jolt to the community, for sure. You know, there were a couple hundred jobs on campus, plus all of the students who were there and spending money in the community. And so that just all stopped. And, I mean, that had a huge impact on the community and our population. Of course, then many of the people who were working there moved away. The population actually dropped during that period of time in the community, and in not just the population, but the students going to school in the school district dropped. So it had a real impact. There isn't any question about it.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us, John Holst. He's an educational consultant, got a long history of work on educational issues in Sitka. He was calling in from I believe, Idaho. Is that where you are, John?
Yes, boys. I'm in Boise, Idaho, visiting with my daughter and a couple granddaughters.
Great. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
So turning back to my in-studio guest, Don Banza, president of APU, I mean, is this what he was saying true, that for very small colleges there is just sort of a challenge of survival that has been faced across the country? And is that something that APU needs to think about in terms of increasing your student body, or do you feel like you're at a sustainable point that, you know, not really in the same position as Selden Jackson was in?
Well, absolutely. It's a problem for every small private liberal arts college in this country, and many have claimed that they're an endangered species. And I think about it every night, mm-hmm. trying to figure out a sustainable business model for this place. Ironically, in a state that's so pro-enterprise, private enterprise, it's one of the toughest business climates I've ever seen for a private university. And part of that is, as I mentioned, is the good side. You know, the state is so heavily invested in the state system. One of the best publicly funded systems and lowest tuition in the country. So it's hard to compete with. But in addition, the state has cut back on their loans significantly
mm-hmm.
after the great banking recession of 08. And so literally it's dried up. So our students have, only 20 of our students qualified for Alaska student loan.
Oh, my gosh.
I think 20, that's ridiculous.
And it's not even a great interest rate as I'm...
No, yeah. It's not. And, you know, that went down from just 3 years. We had 200 students. So they've restricted it so greatly now that it's pretty much done. So that really hurts us too.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this whole tuition discounting to the bottom, everybody's, running themselves out of business by having to lower their tuition
yeah.
and competing for a shrinking middle class.
Interesting. Well, we're going to talk more about that in the second half. And also, we're going to talk a bit about one of the most exciting things for the community about APU, which is the amazing best in the world ski team, or at least best in the country ski team that we have here in Anchorage. So a lot more to talk about higher education in APU. I'm going to be giving out the phone numbers for you to get involved in our conversation. We'll be right back with more of Hometown Alaska in just a moment.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Thank you. We're back. It's Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth, and my guest today is Don Bantz, president of Alaska Pacific University. We're going to talk more about APU programs, APU's business model, and the difficulty of running a private college in Alaska, why it's so hard, and also about the great ski team, and take some of your questions. If you want to get on the air with us, the number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. From outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And the email here is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And here's a email question from Steve. He says, great show. Thank you. What are the program costs and financial aid opportunities at APU for a student with a BA who's interested in earning a teaching certificate and perhaps a master's? Is there a grade 7 through 12 program? So teacher training, is that part of your portfolio at APU?
Yes, it is. In terms of the financial aid question, we don't have the wherewithal to do much in terms of financial aid on the graduate level. Mm-hmm. Although the tuition is less, you know, it's around like 600 a unit range. So in terms of financial aid, we're certified for K through 8 education training.
Okay, so you're not training high school teachers at this point. So that's one of the it's for a teacher, somebody who wants to be a teacher in Alaska. They've got three UA campuses, and APU are their choices for where they could get that. And is that possible to do as a bachelor's or just a master's, or how does that work exactly?
Well, you can get a master's in teaching, or you can get a certificate. You
know, I see.
Not a master's degree, but enough to qualify you for teaching.
Is that a big part of your student body, teachers?
I would like to see it a little larger. It's around, I think, in the 45 range, mm-hmm. full-time students.
So APU student body now is about 500 full-time equivalent students and about 700 total bodies on campus studying. Is that a good number for you? Would you like to see it grow, or how does that work out in terms of the numbers? What we were talking earlier about the sustainability as a business.
Well, as they said in Sitka, 150 is just
no
not
way.
Enough. To,
right.
And I was down there in Sitka when that community was grieving for that. It was very sad. But 500 is not enough. Quite frankly, we can sustain ourselves in the short term on 500, and we've adjusted ourselves accordingly. We've been up to, you know, a couple years ago, we were at 600. I'd much rather be there. We would like to see eventually, I think 730 is kind of our target goal. It'll take a while to get there, but I think that's where we could kind of be sustainable. We could handle that growth within the existing facilities. So that's kind of our business plan, is how do we get to that point, and which program should we develop that will help us get there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's about attracting more students to come to APU, but I mean, sort of the layman would say, well, you're running a business and you're turning away 2/3 of the people who apply, right? Because you have an acceptance rate. Why not? The question would be, just accept a few more people.
Well, you can do that. There are implications. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are coming there. Our niche, you know, we're a boutique college. Our niche is quality. And that's what we can provide in small class sizes. And when you have that small class sizes and 1/3 of the students aren't ready or prepared, it drags everybody down. And we've kind of said we don't want to go there.
You want to have bright students show up, and they're working with other bright students.
Right.
So how do you go about marketing a college? It seems like it would be a challenge. And I know from my daughter's experience, as soon as she took the PSAT, our mailbox was full of letters, most of which she doesn't even open. So reaching those talented students must be a bit of a challenge.
Oh, it is. And everybody's having to recalibrate their game plan and recruiting strategies with the whole social networking and the way the young kids receive information.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're not used to getting letters in the mail.
Yeah.
And I would think that you want to approach them with the positive, with the what they can get out of APU, but they can't. They've also got to be thinking about the finances, and that's always, you can't have them not knowing whether they can afford it until the last part of the sales pitch, right?
Right. And again, we think we have a good pitch in terms of quality and the value. You know, mm-hmm. the two numbers that are scary for me right now, and it should be for everybody in this country, only 22% of Americans believe that a college education is affordable.
Yeah.
You know, that's horrible. And only 40% feel like they're providing good value for the money. Those are staggering numbers. So you really have to compete on value and price right now. And I think we do. I mean, for a quality private liberal arts college education for $15,000 and knowing and seeing the results you get here, I think we've got a message to get out there. And, of course, our budgets are limited to get that.
Right.
Word of mouth is one of our best, marketers.
Right. For those Alaska students, they save on travel. They can get a great liberal arts college, a small setting here. What about those students you'd like to bring from outside? And you can't be on the normal college route, right? Because it's quite a trip to come up here and check APU out.
Well, we have targeted college fairs. We can only go to so many down below. And we do that. And we'll get anywhere from 50 to 70 students from outside.
Uh-huh.
And, that helps.
How do you figure out the right student to be appealing to? I mean, going to schools that have a progressive philosophy or what's the sort of the screen to know who, because you can't advertise to the whole world.
Yes. Well, and again, we've kind of cut our focus more to trying to retarget Alaskans, because I firmly believe that there are 10 students in every high school that would be an absolute perfect fit for APU. Mm-hmm. And if we could just get those, we'd be solid. And so right now, that's the focus. Not discounting the outside. We'll still do that. But 10 students, we're not talking big numbers for us.
Right, right. You only need to get a boutique college. You only need the boutique students to fill up the boutique, right?
That's right.
So tell me about the Early Honors Program. This is something that's for promising high school seniors. What's that all about?
That's one of my favorite programs. We take the best and the brightest high school seniors. And as you probably know, senioritis is the most serious malady affecting every high school senior in this country, where they blow off their senior year and they coast. They don't take the math and science. Early Honors allows them to come to APU and complete their senior year and graduate as a college sophomore. So they do a complete first year of college. They can still participate in their high school sports and activities after school because all the classes are in the morning. And after that first year, they're ready to go anywhere, and they do. They go all over the country in terms of, the best colleges. Many of them stay.
Right. So it's they're essentially being a college freshman but still finishing their high school requirements, or they pretty much got their requirements under their belt by the time they get there?
Well, it's both, but you're taking college level courses, science, physics, the whole range. It's a full boat. And what I love about it is these kids are smart, and it's a learning community they go through as a cohort. They raise the bar for all our other freshmen, and it's great to see them. And it's one of the best programs going.
How many students are doing that?
We cap it at 50.
Okay. And what's the tuition? Is it the same as the college tuition?
Well, tuition is, and this is something, we'll guarantee it for 4 years. So you come in at $15,000 and we'll guarantee that. You won't get an increase for 4 years. So essentially you're getting a three-year college degree.
Wow. Okay. So to apply for that, families should just contact APU and just find out about it. I suppose kids have to show a certain level of promise, test scores and that sort of thing to get in.
Right, and then we're having another open house. Oh, I think it's Wednesday, April 18th is our third one this year at 6 o'clock at a Carr Gostine's.
So. Yeah, we don't really have elite prep schools here in Alaska, but this would be maybe the closest thing you'd get to it. Yeah, I have a terrible memory, and I was supposed to announce that Alaska Pacific University is a nonprofit contributor to KSKA programming. In case you hadn't heard all the promotional announcements. My name is Charles Wolforth. The show is Hometown Alaska. Our guest today is APU President Don Bantz. And your calls and questions are welcome at 550-8433 or outside of Anchorage, 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. Well, I think probably most Alaskans are most familiar with APU through the extraordinary accomplishments of the Nordic ski team. Keegan Randall has recently become, I believe, the only American ever to win a World Cup championship, and a number of other APU athletes have done extraordinarily well. Now, you don't have a whole range of collegiate athletics at APU, obviously, but what you do, you seem to do quite well.
Yeah, and it's an amazing program, and it's interesting. It's not a traditional sports team. It's a hybrid. It's a club, And they just do wonderful things, taking kids from the Devos, the young juniors, all the way up through master skiers, as you know. And so, you know, I listened to Eric Flora, our coach, at the last fundraiser, and incidentally, they have another one coming up, Nordic Ski Fundraiser, May 6th. You know, he credited his team's success to three powerful principles. One is you set high expectations, extremely high expectations. You create a climate where that discipline is there to meet them. And then you create a climate of support for each other. And they do that in everything they do. If you've trained with them, you mm-hmm. know that. I've trained with them. And they're just remarkable, the energy they have. And what impresses me, too, about their athletic ability is that the fact that they're so community service-minded. And they're good students. You know, they're really good students. And I always love stories about hearing them. They're on the tour and they're studying for a class before a race or doing a paper. And it's just wonderful having them around. It's been terrific.
So is that an asset for the university in terms of developing interest and getting people to know about APU?
It's been a major PR machine, absolutely. And what, again, the beauty of them working, they reach back into the community and work with the kids at all ages. And many of those kids will start training with us and coaching with working with the coaches. And hopefully, eventually, many of them will come to the university as student athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
starting to happen.
So the skiers on the team, some of them are student athletes, and some of them are just folks that have just signed up to work out with the team. So that makes it a hybrid.
Yes, and well, Keegan's an example as a student, and then she just evolved into this elite professional athlete, and you know, as a result, and she still trains with the team and uh-huh. and gives back to the community.
Yeah, that's great. So how did that come about? Was that just? I mean, it was before you inherited it when you
yes.
showed up, right?
Oh, yes.
It's just a little bit of serendipity that something great grew there, I guess.
Well, it is. And a lot of people, you know, Jim Haffey and all the people that, you know, kind of we stand on their shoulders from this whole community is involved in Nordic skiing to a great degree. And it just happened that we have the trails there and we happened to get a couple good coaches at the right time. And it just all came together. Mm-hmm. And Eric mm-hmm. inherited a nice program, too. And he's just taken it to the next level.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit, your campus is certainly a remarkable asset, about 170 acres right in the middle of Anchorage, most of it natural, gorgeous land. An issue I think that happened in Sheldon Jackson was that their land was more valuable than what they were able to do, and so there was always this threat of selling off. How do you see using that campus as an asset? Does it need to remain sort of integral, or is it, you know, do you see that as a way of raising money?
Well, unfortunately, it has been over the years. We used to have 500 acres in the UMed district. You can imagine what that's worth
wow.
now, and they had to sell it over the years to keep the, you know, the doors open, much of it to University of Alaska Anchorage, including the piece where the new sports arena is going to go.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we have to be careful. We obviously want to balance and keep it in as pristine a state as possible, and yet at the same time, we have to be realistic, and that's why we're trying to do the development around the periphery mm-hmm. and keep the campus core intact and keep the trails intact. But everybody's concerned about the Northern Access Road mm-hmm. and whether that's going to go through, and if it does, it'll change the nature of this place. But the UMed district is so vibrant and growing, 16,000 workers strong, and it's just going to keep growing.
What's your position on that new road? It's been discussed forever, the idea of taking essentially Bregaw and connecting it into what we now call Elmore so that there's a north-south thoroughfare. Then there's been also discussion of just bringing something in from the north to bring traffic into the area but turning discouraging through traffic. Does APU have a position on what you'd like to see happen?
Well, my position, and again, if you've seen that chart, a lot of those roads bisected our campus.
Mm-hmm.
And so our position is we'd rather not see the road. If it has to be a road, it should be the extension, the Bregaw extension. And we think the sports arena is going to impact the traffic so much in here that it might be inevitable. But again, we would rather not see it, although the traffic is a huge impact on us with the sports arena, and it's going to be particularly our endowed properties across the street. So it's something we have to pay attention mm-hmm. to.
Now, Steve Cobb, the UAA athletic director, was here on the show, and I asked him, do you need to have that extension in order to have the capacity you need for the sports center? He said, no, we have a traffic plan that shows that it'll work. You look a little skeptical.
Well, I have to laugh because the municipal traffic plan said there would be no appreciable impact. And if you've been to the Sullivan Arena and had a game, you know that that's not true. So we're trying to mitigate those impacts, but I think we all expect to be an impact.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you'd like to avoid it because it's the campus setting is one of the great assets of APU, and having a major road run through it, obviously. Is that your main reason for not wanting it?
Yeah, well, it would change the whole nature of the UMed. But again, as I said, the UMed's growing. Providence is, you know, the access to the emergency rooms. And so, you know, there's a whole UMed district now planning on the possibilities. But so we'll continue to take a position. We'd rather not see it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd now like to go to Peter, who has a question about the APU endowment. Peter?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In fact, your discussion is exactly my concern. I've understood in the past that, particularly regarding the UMed plan and the Bregaw extension, that students and faculty have been opposed almost unanimously, but that the trustees have supported developing it primarily for endowment purposes. One of my concerns is that APU is a member of the ECO League, five colleges, universities throughout the country. And to justify, if APU were to justify supporting the Bregaw extension and other development in their lands, and apparently that's also going to happen on the east side of campus now, and as a result of this proposed road around the lake, how that fits with the philosophy of the Eco League colleges and partners across the country.
So the environmental response to the idea of building another road, I guess, is the...
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have to play that off against the fact that of a sustainable university. If we're not around, then, you know, sustainability is kind of a moot point. So I think, again, it's a balance. We have to figure out, since we receive no support from the state, and I want to reiterate that, we receive no support from the state. The Constitution prevents it. So how do we survive? And the way we survive is we have to earn income. We earn income through, you know, modest property development on the periphery. And I know a lot of folks see APU as a park. They treat it as a park. And I can't tell you how many people we've had yelling and cussing at us on our land saying, this is a public park and we can bring anything we want here. Well, it's not. It's a private university and we allow the public to use it. But we have the right to develop it. And I think a lot of folks in the hearings that we've had it's been surprising to me to see that they see it as a park and expect us to subsidize not only the education, but a park. So realistically, we've got to have a viable business plan. And part of that involves some modest endowment property growth.
Thank you very much.
So, and when you say endowment property growth, you mean something along the lines of the USGS, where you're building offices for somewhat compatible business, or could it be beyond that?
Well, again, we're trying to stay with honoring the PLI designation of the land, mm-hmm. and any business we would put on there would have to contribute to the curriculum. That's kind of the criteria and lens we use. And so... for example, the U.S. Geological Survey, really connected to our curriculum. State has expressed an interest in similar building for their state geology service. We think that's another compatible use.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The caller mentioned something about the five eco-colleges, and can you tell us what that's all about?
Well, it's a consortium of five small private liberal arts colleges, all in a kind of the same size as us, most on the East Coast and one in Arizona. And we band together for... not only marketing purposes, but similar philosophies. But any student that comes here to APU can go to any one of those four other universities seamlessly. So they can spend a semester there, a year there, whatever. And then similarly, a lot of their students rotate into APU.
And what are those partners?
Okay, so we got Green Mountain College in Vermont.
Okay.
College of the Atlantic.
In Bar Harbor, Maine.
And we got Prescott in Arizona and Northland. And Wisconsin.
I see. Okay, interesting. So, and you also have a study abroad program. Is that where kids can go overseas, or how does that work?
We have several programs, and again, the beauty of our session is we have 4-week blocks. So you take one class during those blocks that happen two or three times a year, and many programs will go overseas. We just had a program, Early Honors Program, went to Cuba this year, one of the first American programs that could go in there, educational programs. Early Honors goes every year. We go to Hawaii. We'll go to...
So those are the high school students
going to Cuba.
Wow.
Right. They go every year to an international site.
Uh-huh.
It's part of the Early Honors Program.
Wow, that's pretty exciting.
And then, of course, our faculty can take students all over the world for those four-week blocks.
Mm-hmm. And what are APU's greatest academic strengths? Environmental studies seems to be an emphasis. Where do you see your strongest selling points academically?
Well, certainly environmental studies, and the biggest component of that is marine biology. And I would say I think this is one of the best in the country undergraduate. You do things here as a sophomore in marine biology that you couldn't do until you were a graduate student in many, many places. In fact, we've got that program working with Fish and Game, state and federal. They go out on a site for 3 or 4 weeks. There was a clam die-off in Nanilchik, and they went down there and spent time, actually published a paper, spent another couple weeks in the Prince William Sound and all the ports there working with on the ichthyophonous disease that's attacking fish.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's a really signature program. Psychology is one of our biggest programs and very popular. We now have a doctorate in psychology. Of course, the outdoor studies is distinctive. We train some really great teachers. Got a great liberal arts program and of course the business.
Outdoor studies is sort of outdoor like mountain climbing, that sort of thing, or what does outdoor studies mean exactly?
Well, it's you know, a lot of programs, there's a lot of jobs up here that are in the outdoors, both mm-hmm. in the Forest Service or in guides, you know, lodge operators. And so it's both learning wilderness skills, but it's also learning those other kind of liberal arts and business skills that you need to survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And marine biology is a pretty unusual undergraduate degree. It's not something that all colleges offer as an undergraduate degree. Is that not correct?
Well, it's true, but you know, there's no better place to study it than Alaska.
Yeah.
And we've got a 60 student enrollment there, again, one of our largest programs, and they just do amazing things.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you very much. Is there any final comment you want to get in here in the few seconds, the 30 seconds we have left?
Yeah, put APU on your college tour.
Yeah,
this spring.
I'm just making a note of that. I think my daughter's at school, but we're going to talk about this tonight because it sounds like a good fit for a lot of kids, a lot of Alaskan kids, and for some reason maybe not in the front of their minds when they're making their lists.
So. No, and it's affordable. Remember that. It's very affordable.
Well, great. My guest today has been APU President Don Bantz. Once again, Alaska Public University is a nonprofit contributor to KSKA programming, though that doesn't have anything to do with our show today. Next week on Hometown Alaska, host Kathleen McCoy to talk about spring breakup. Find out what to expect this year and how to prepare your home for melting season. That is, if you haven't already washed away by the time next week's show is on, because it's already pretty damp out there. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.